You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is David Bryan, and this is Curiosity Invited, a podcast inspired by endless curiosity. Tune in for an open-minded conversation about interesting and important things. Hello, my name is David Bryan, and this is Curiosity Invited, and you are about to see a podcast. I think it was that last week. Yes, a few days ago, I had the great, both privilege and fun, visiting with an old friend, Karen Bass. Karen Bass, Congresswoman, 37th Congressional District in California. She is an extraordinary woman. I have known her for 30 years. Was not intended to be a political conversation, not necessarily, not part of her campaign. She was gracious enough to have a conversation with me, and I had, as always, when talking with Karen, I learned things, and I appreciated her more and more. A little bit of background. Karen Bass represents the 37th Congressional District in California. After she started and ran the Community Coalition, an organizing group in Los Angeles for years, she ran for California Assembly and won, and then became Speaker of California Assembly. The first African-American woman speaker of the California Assembly in history. She then ran when her time was terming out. There was a six-year term limit. She ran for Congress and won. She's been the chair of the Congressional Black Caucus. She's been a strong advocate for foster children and for dispossessed and for people living in poverty and living on the street. And she is now running for mayor of the city of Los Angeles. And, you know, as I said, not intended to be a political conversation necessarily. I hope she wins. I think she is uniquely qualified as a person to address some of the pressing issues that Los Angeles faces today and for many years. And if you're looking for somebody who can find a solution or at least point in the direction of solving that problem, it is my friend Karen Bass. So I had a wonderful time, and I hope you will have a good time listening to this. And if you're in Los Angeles, I hope you'll vote for Karen on now by absentee ballot or by the time things close on June 7th, I believe. Anyway, thanks again for tuning in to Curiosity Invited. Welcome to Curiosity Invited. My name is David Bryan, and I have the great, great pleasure of speaking with, a good friend, and I have the great honor of speaking with Congresswoman Karen Bass, representing the 37th Congressional District in the state of California. And truth in advertising, I've known Karen for longer than both of us have been around, actually, because you're about what, 30?
There you go.
I'm 32, so no, it's lovely to see you. And so we're just going to dive in because I know your time is limited, and you got important stuff to do, and I really appreciate you being willing to have a chat with me.
Absolutely.
What I told Jenny, who is off camera, was, you know, I'm a male in the United States of America over the age of 35. So of course I have a podcast, because doesn't everyone? So look, last time you and I spoke, you said to me, you're thinking of another term, maybe two, and then retiring. And then all of a sudden you decided to take on this easy gig of, you know, well, the easy gig of running for mayor of Los Angeles. And then when you win, notice I didn't say if you win, I said when you win, to be the mayor of Los Angeles, California. And so why did you decide to take the easy way out and take on this, you know, fluff job of mayor?
Well, absolutely. And David, it's great to see you, even if it is only on a screen. So I do look forward to the next time you come to Los Angeles and hanging out with you. And you're absolutely right. That is how I saw my future, you know, a couple of more terms in Congress and then to pass the baton on to someone else. But what has happened over the last few years, and I'm not sure when's the last time you've been to LA, but, you know, we've had a problem with housing in our city for quite some time.
Right.
And I think because of the pandemic and because of just Los Angeles becoming less and less affordable, we now have an absolute explosion and we have a crisis. So David, they haven't done the homeless count in the last couple of years because of COVID, but they did do it this year and the numbers will be coming out soon. But it is anticipated that the numbers will show that there are more than 50,000 people living outside in tents, in cars, in RVs, in the second largest city, in the richest country in the history of the world.
It's kind of wild. It is
insanity. And one of the things, so that's one of the reasons.
Yeah.
The other reason that's even bigger is because the mood of people in Los Angeles now is exasperation. They are like, get this out of my sight.
Yes.
And so there's a fine line between exasperation that leads to really helping individuals and solving the problem, right, or exasperation that leads to criminalizing the problem.
Right.
And my concern is that for those people that have lost their ability to have empathy, and I'm not casting shame on them, but if that sentiment catches hold and somebody is elected that agrees with that perspective, mm-hmm, we'll start criminalizing people. And even if you don't care about the people, the bottom line is we've done that before and it doesn't work.
Doesn't work.
You arrest people, they'll be in jail maybe 3 days, and then they'll be right back out on the street. Maybe they won't return to your block. Somebody else will return to your block because they haven't solved the problem.
Right.
And they'll just go someplace else. So that is what's at stake in our city. We're at a crossroads, and it's a question of will we move forward into the future or will we reach back into the past and resurrect and repeat solutions that did not solve anything, but actually contributed to the problem.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, I've been gone from Los Angeles for over 10 years, 12 years, 13 years. I was up in Northern California for a while. Right. And then, and then recently, a year and a half, moved to Wyoming, which is a whole other conversation. And, I will say, footnote, love it here, but I've been back to Los Angeles quite a bit and will be, you know, go on a semi-regular basis. And it is noticeable. It is absolutely noticeable that the problem has grown. And I got to say, you know, I've been following because it's you. So I've been following the mayoral race and the many people who jumped in. And I see this race, maybe you could talk about it, Matt. I see something that is, you know, it's also a contest of how to approach problems, right? I mean, there are the two people that are the most high profile that are running, obviously you and Rick Caruso, and Rick seems like, I don't know him, he seems like a very capable, very competent, top-down manager, mm-hmm, who is absolutely capable of, quote, solving problems in a particular sort of way. And you, I know, as highly collaborative. And in my experience, you know, you, you, it's, it's not that you don't have the authority in your toolbox and the use of authority, but that it seems to me my experience, both of you and problems, you know, you would much rather work with everybody and to come up with an effective solution. And it's my experience over the years that, you know, involving people, collaborating with people from all walks of and from all sides of aisles, is most likely to reach the solution, a solution that will work. And it's an election. It seems to me that it's an election that is shaping up to be about that choice as well. Do we want to really solve a problem in a way that includes everybody, everybody, every voice, every interest, or do we want to sort of make believe we can sort of force it out of existence? And I suppose we could, you know, with enough weapons, you can force almost anything. But for you, it's not an academic thing, but this is a really interesting puzzle, this election, right? Because it gives people that choice, seems.
Yes, and I think that, you know, Rick is somebody who I know and respect and have worked with before.
Yeah.
But in terms of solving social problems, deep social problems and severe poverty, I do not believe he has the background or the exposure to do that at all. Yeah. He has certainly been exposed to poverty through his charitable work.
Yes.
That is profoundly different
than
being on the ground working with people and having an in-depth understanding of what their problems are. His career has been spent around developing extremely high-end properties that are very nice, although there's a lot of people in the neighborhoods of those properties that have different opinions about that, the impact that the properties have had.
Yeah.
But, you know, that is a qualitatively different experience. And so the question is, and that's why I described it as a crossroads. Do we go back to the past in terms of how we've solved problems?
Right.
Or do we actually solve the problem? I would say, do we go back in the past as to how we've addressed problems?
Right.
Or do
exactly.
we actually solve problems?
Right.
Because
right.
a lot of people, like I said, just want the problems to disappear. They really are not concerned about what happens to the people and have begun to view the population as a monolith, which is meth smoking drug addicts who
right.
want to be on the street and do not want to be housed.
Yeah, that's another thing that's you know, it's highly obvious when you read and listen to the approaches. Your at least the way you describe the situation, the problem is nuanced and you recognize that there are people on the streets for a variety of different reasons.
Exactly.
And that unless you take that into account, what are you solving? You know, as if somehow you can use one size never fits all. And in this situation, it certainly doesn't fit all. And so without that sort of approach, I can't imagine a solution working.
Well, and first of all, how you analyze a problem points you in the direction of how you're going to solve it. And so if you don't understand who the people are that are on the street, then I don't know how you would address it. So,
right.
for example, in looking at the categories, there are some people who are on the street. Is this too loud in the background?
Yeah, I'll edit it out. And now we're back from the gardener.
Well, I muted it for a quick second. I think he's done. Oh, so if you look at the population, there are some people who are unhoused just for economic reasons.
Yes, absolutely.
If you help somebody pay their first and last month's rent, they'll be fine. Mm-hmm. There are some people that are unhoused who are veterans, who actually have the benefit of housing. They should receive that benefit, but there's too much bureaucracy in the VA to process them. There are people who are unhoused who are former foster youth. And you know about foster youth, David.
You bet.
When you turn 18 or 21, we cut you off.
Yeah, you're gone.
You have nothing. And then surprise, surprise, you couch surf for a while, and then pretty soon you have a tent.
Mm-hmm.
There are people who are unhoused who are women and children fleeing domestic violence and have no place they can go. They are afraid. They either don't know where to go to a shelter or they're afraid to be in a shelter because they're afraid somebody's going to find them. But if you pitch a tent or live in a car, I can escape that violent situation. There are people who were incarcerated in the days when we decided we were going to lock everybody up. And then when we began to release people, we did not plan for where they were going to go when they got released. Mm-hmm. And because of all of the barriers that we put up where we continue to punish people after they've finished serving their term, they can't work, they can't rent a car, maybe they can't get a driver's license, et cetera, then there are people who are unhoused who are suffering from chronic diseases, some of which are mental illness, substance abuse, or both, mm-hmm. or other chronic diseases.
Sure.
So I think that you have to get people off the streets immediately. But then you have to address why they were unhoused to begin with. Because if somebody is profoundly mentally ill and you put them in a house and you don't treat their mental illness, then what do you think is going to happen?
Is there enough housing in various forms in Los Angeles to do that?
No. LA needs 500,000 more units of housing. 500,000. We need 250,000 right away. And if the state does not, I mean, if the city does not figure out how to do it, then we're going to be penalized by withholding on the state level a lot of money. So we have to come up with 250,000 more units. My fear is that it could be 250,000 units that no one can afford.
Right.
So
I'm going to ask you how you do that. And you can wait till that sound dies down and I'll ask you again.
So we are going to have to be creative in Los Angeles, but it can be done. You know that Los Angeles is very spread out.
Yes, indeed.
So one of the directions for LA to go in is up. And there's a lot of different places where that can happen. You know, we are finally building out mass transportation, and we can certainly build around the transportation centers. There's a lot of property that the federal, state, county, and city government own, mm-hmm. hundreds of acres that we own. We could build there. Now, not all of those acres are usable, but plenty of them are. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of different solutions that we have. But one of the big problems is the mammoth bureaucracy in the second largest city in the country. Smaller cities can figure out how to get stuff done.
Sure.
LA is like moving a mountain.
Right.
And so one of the first things that needs to be done is the red tape needs to be cut, which is why I and other people running would declare a state of emergency to allow us to bypass some of the bureaucracy. I happen to believe that a local state of emergency is not enough, and it needs to be a federal state of emergency as well, so we could bring in FEMA, address this like it's an earthquake or a hurricane.
And is that, do you think there's the will somewhere in Washington to do that?
It's not Washington, actually. A federal state of emergency is called by the governor.
Oh. No
kidding. And so I am, because the governor right now is not sure he wants to do that. Because I'm in Congress, I'm trying to get part of this done anyway. And let me give you very concrete examples.
Yeah.
HUD, Housing and Urban Development,
right.
They have restrictions around the housing vouchers that they have. One, the dollar amount is too low. LA is very, very expensive. You got to raise the dollar amount in LA. Some people are not eligible for vouchers, like people who were formerly incarcerated and all that. For God's sake, we got to remove that. David, the mentality of the city and the county up until now is our goal is to reduce homelessness. If we don't have an orientation that says our goal is to end homelessness, and I understand, I'm not saying that like it's going to be done overnight, but you have a different orientation to a problem if you say your goal is to reduce it and address it, versus whatever it takes, we have to end this. It is not acceptable.
People should not have to live in this tree.
Right, and they should not. I mean, there's some things you don't do outside, and you don't pitch a tent wherever you want to pitch a tent. You pitch a tent on campgrounds.
Right.
You know, but we have allowed this to happen because we have no place else for people. And so what you have seen on your trips to LA is that now you have little communities called encampments.
Yeah.
And encampments can be as large as 100 people, or it could be, you know, a couple of families. And we cannot have that be acceptable in our city. But, you know, that can immediately lead to, okay, it's not acceptable. If you don't get out of here, I'm going to arrest you.
Right. Exactly.
That's my concern. Because, right. Yes, we have to move people off the street. But if our orientation is you just have to get off the street, then all you're going to do is just either move them around to other neighborhoods, mm-hmm. or you're going to detain them. Toward what end?
And you've been talking about homelessness. Obviously, it's a huge problem. It is. It may be the problem in Los Angeles. I don't know.
It is. There's without question. There's two problems. Homelessness is number one, and crime is nipping at its heels.
Right. Right. And you know, I'm sure people could go read your thing, but do you want to say something about an approach to that will make sense?
An approach to crime?
To the crime situation in
Los Angeles. Sure. No, absolutely. You know, crime has increased, and we have to admit that and accept that and address that. So if somebody commits a crime, they need to be held accountable, full stop.
Yeah.
But what I want to do is hold people accountable, but at the same time, I want to invest a lot of money in preventing future crimes. Stop the current crime, prevent future crimes. With tested, research-based, evidence-based strategies on crime reduction that never really get invested in. We'll pour some money in when crime goes up, and then when crime goes back down again, because crime always cycles, then we'll take the money away. And then when crime goes up again, we'll say, well, that didn't work. If you cut off your investment, you're absolutely right. It stopped working. It's not that it didn't work.
It actually did work, and then you stopped it.
Right. And I will tell you that one of many reasons why crime has increased is because we did stop the work during the pandemic. The organizations that address crime from a community-based level also went into quarantine, right. like everybody else. Right. And so that work stopped, and surprise, surprise, crime increased. The other thing that happened over the pandemic was a massive, massive purchase of guns. I mean, even in Culver City, David, that lone gun store on Washington Boulevard.
Yeah, I remember.
The line wrapped around the block.
Isn't that wild?
At the beginning, it's like, I don't know. People thought, I guess they were going to have to shoot for food or something. Yeah, I don't
exactly. But folks are going to come to my house, and I want to be prepared.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Which is insanity. But so in some neighborhoods, as I've been all over the city, in some neighborhoods, they want more police, and they want police now. And so to me, the quickest way to get police on the beat is to get officers who are working behind the desk back out on the street. So the first thing I would do would be to hire civilians to replace those officers that are already trained, already capable. Now, not every officer that's behind the desk could go back out on the street for a variety of reasons, injury being one of them. But for those that can, and that can get a couple hundred officers on the street right away. The reason why I focus on that as a first step is because right now it's very, very difficult to hire police officers. Now, I think we should hire at the same time, but realistically speaking, it's going to take longer to get officers on the beat for several reasons. Number one, it isn't the most attractive profession right now. So they're not overflowing with recruits, but even the recruits that they have, it takes a long time to get through the vetting process because the personnel office is way understaffed. Mm. They did a lot of early retirements at the beginning of the pandemic, thinking that they were going to run into a budget crisis. And so that left the personnel office, you know, woefully understaffed. Mm. So an average class, a recruitment class that goes through training, the capacity is 40. LAPD can't put more than 23 officers through that training on any one class. That's why I say, if you want to get officers on the beat ASAP, get them from behind the desk.
Does anybody push back against that?
No.
Right. I was about to say, I mean, isn't that like
common sense?
Yeah.
No, nobody pushes back. And by the way, I regularly talk to the police chief because, as you know, I've been involved in looking at crime trends and trying to figure out how to address crime for the last 30 years.
Right.
So I asked the chief, you know, about these strategies, and he agreed with them. The difference is that some candidates are just not being honest and saying, well, I'm going to hire 1,500 police officers, when they know good and well the city would go broke if you tried to do that. And mm-hmm. number two, there's not the capacity there. But that sounds way more sexy.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Than me saying we're going to put officers, you know, from behind desk on the beat. And one thing is that, you know, most candidates, and not all, will respond to the polls. If the polls say that people would really be excited if you say you're going to do something that you know is unachievable, then you say it.
So can you speak about that for a second, just in terms of your, I mean, you've got a long career in the Assembly, Speaker of the Assembly in Congress. You know, you were not, when I met you, a politician, certainly right. Not a career, whatever that means, a career politician. You were a problem solver in a different way. And then you either contrary to or because of good advice got into that world. And how have you avoided, you know, it's really tempting. I mean, even in something like this podcast, right? You know, you look at the numbers of how many people did it reach and geez, what did I do? And how have you avoided that temptation
of what
in your career of looking at the polls and saying, this plays well. I'll do more of that.
No. I mean, I do that, but there's a way to do it that's honest.
It's honest.
It's problem solving. And there's a way to do it where you're just exploiting people's fears. So I am looking at the polls that say people are very, very concerned about crime.
No, but one thing I know about you, it's just, you know, you're a person of, from my point of view, you're a person of enormous integrity. You're not going to say something
exactly
that's not true because right. It will get you something.
Exactly.
But there's a temptation there
for so many people. It isn't. No, it's just not necessary. And I think that it's just, how do I even describe it? It's lazy. I mean, you can go down that route because it's the easiest way to go. But if you actually care about people, you would think about the consequences of what you're proposing. And that the consequences of proposing things like that actually hurt people. So if your job is just worry about yourself and your own career and getting elected, then yeah, you'll do anything. I won't do that. And by the way, what Caruso has done, a perfect example of it is that he's taking advantage of the cynicism that people have about elected officials. So he labels them as quote unquote career politicians.
Right.
And what exactly does that mean?
I think that means, I mean, what it actually means is people who, in most cases, people who have devoted enormous amount of their time, energy, passion, life force to helping people solve problems. That's what it actually means. But what the connotation is, you know what career politicians are like.
Well, that's the only thing that you've ever done in your life
right.
is run from office to office.
Right.
When in fact, you know, what he's done in his life is spent his life addressing his personal wealth. And I don't disparage him for that. He's done great charity work.
Yeah.
Don't disparage me for how I've led my life when actually I've spent my life trying to address these problems. The other thing that's said is that you haven't solved them. Well, we don't have world peace either. So I'm going to really criticize President Biden because he's not solved the war in Ukraine. Or that he hasn't been able to get a bill, you know, his bills through the Senate versus what have you done with your life? You know?
Do you have the option of staying, of remaining in Congress? Or
no,
running again?
I gave up my seat. And one of the decision points for me in deciding not to run is my feeling as though the person that would follow me is a serious legislator. And I'm very excited about the woman that is running, Sidney Kumlocker, who is currently a state senator,
yes.
who has been an incredible legislator
great.
And public servant. So I know that the district is in great hands.
That's great. I mean, so I'm not sure this is a fair question. So what's your dream gig, or is the mayor of Los Angeles your dream gig? You know, I mean, obviously you had a lot of press and airtime when it was the vice presidential choice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of people wanted you for that. I personally was holding out for, mm-hmm. no, that she's next speaker of the Speaker of the House. Come on, let's get serious here.
But now, see, that's if it was about career,
yeah.
A career move would have been much smarter for me to stay in Congress and run for a leadership position.
Right.
That's a career move. Right. I've never been motivated by my career. What I'm motivated by are the issues that I could solve in the particular position that I have. So one of my dreams has always been, I mean, I feel good about the work that I've done over the last several decades, but I've always had this angst in me of no matter what I've done, there's still people on the street. Mm-hmm. And that I would feel, you asked me what my dream gig would be. It's not so much a job, but my dream would be that I could actually set the path to end this. Mm-hmm. That I would significantly reduce it in my time in office, but the trajectory would be clear mm-hmm. toward the end. That to me, then I could put a check that I've spent my life dedicated to fighting for social and economic justice, and it saved people's lives. And now I can pass the baton and actually retire, because that is what I want to do. I don't want to run for an office again. This is it. And you know, the other thing is that, you know, I entered this life of an elected official late in life. I mean,
yes, I know.
Start running in their 20s. I was in my 50s. And so the majority of my life has been spent in the community, in the private sector, whether it was the nonprofit sector or working in hospitals. That's been my work life. And I've been in office now 18 years, 12, six in the Senate, I mean, in the state assembly, and 12 in Congress. And if I can finish it off by coming home and getting these people off the street, then I will be able to say, you know, well spent.
Mm-hmm.
It's always bothered me that I would retire and that problem not only continues to exist, but has actually exploded.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, by the way, David, that Black people are 9% of the population of LA and 40% of the unhoused.
I didn't know the 9% number, but yes.
Yep. Latinos are 49% of the city and 30% of the unhoused. So the unhoused are 70% Black or brown.
Right.
So what do you think that's going to lead to if the path goes toward the pass?
You bet. I know. I mean, it's, and you know, obviously for my money, you're the person to do it. It's when I think of you as mayor, which of course will happen. When I think of you as mayor, it's one of those few things that gets me thinking, well, could I actually move back to Los Angeles? Could I,
yes.
Could I do something in Karen's administration that would work in that direction? So yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. I love it.
Yeah. But we have a little bit. When is the date?
Well, people are voting now, but the end of the election is June 7th. So a few more days left and it's like, oh my God.
And then you can exhale.
Yes, I can exhale one way or another. Right. Yes.
Can I ask you, what are your days like? I mean,
oh, sure.
Yeah. What are your days like? Are you just like nonstop the moment you get up?
Oh, absolutely. You know, usually it starts with, you know, Zoom. Well, because of Zoom now, you know, my day can start at, you know, 6, 7, or 8 o'clock, especially because I still have to function on 2 time zones.
Yes.
You know, I do still have my day job.
Yes, I was about to say, you do still have this other job.
And I'm in D.C., you know, when we're in session, most of the time. Some of the time I'm not. But when I'm not in D.C. and I'm in L.A., for example, I think next week we're not in D.C. We have what's called a committee week, which means our committees meet. And so the committee might meet at nine.
Yes.
Yeah. It might meet at 9 or 10 in the morning, which are 6 or 7 in the morning.
Right.
You know, here, because it's based on East Coast time. But I'm running, Zooming, going around all parts of the city, which is very exciting. I mean, representing a congressional district is great, but it is the congressional district that I've lived in my whole life. So I know it very well. Right. But now being all around the city and, you know, going to neighborhoods that either I haven't been in for a long time or I've never been in.
Have you been surprised by anything that you've sort of discovered about Los Angeles that since you've started this process? Not a trick question.
No. Well, I mean, I think if anything that I've been surprised by is just the incredible warmth and excitement that I receive when I go out, and that people really are just looking for someone to be a decisive leader, someone who really is focusing on the issues that they are confronting every day and how welcoming they are to me, no matter what part of town I'm going to. Yeah.
So you're somebody who has for the last, well, even before you became a politician, you know, you've had microphones stuck in your face for years. Mm-hmm. And so is there a question that you wish somebody had asked you that nobody's ever asked?
That I don't know, because it has been for many, many years.
Oh my God.
But you did ask me a question that I didn't answer that I would like to. And that is, you know, why did I go from working in the community to being an elected official? And it's something, first of all, I think I'm a typical female, and this might change, you know, with this new generation, but women typically don't rush to office. Women usually have to be, you know, encouraged and pushed and pressured. Mm-hmm. And I definitely fit that stereotype. I do think that that's kind of ending, but I definitely fell into that, where I was working for 14 years in the community. When we met, I was running Community Coalition in the heart of South Central, trying to address the gang crime drug problem. And we had worked really well with the local elected officials and our state officials, and things were going well. And then term limits hit. And those officials that we were working with were leaving. And the ones that were, you know, in line to take their places, we believed that they were going to reverse all the work that we had done because they were going to fall behind various interest groups. Number one, the alcohol industry, when we had spent years trying to reduce the number of liquor stores.
I remember that.
There were candidates coming who wanted to bring them right back. So it was like, you're going to watch 14 years of work kind of disappear. And so people started talking to me about running, and I, you know, considered it. And then you probably remember this too, when my father got sick, you know, I kind of stopped everything and took care of him and decided not to run. But then another seat came up and people were really pushing me, in particular Congresswoman Diane Watson, because all of the Black women had termed out of Sacramento. So there were no Black women in the state legislature at all. Things like that compel me. Just running for office is like, whatever. But I was encouraged to look at it. And what I realized, I went up to Sacramento because my first response was, why on earth would I want to do that? But when I went up to Sacramento and talked to people that were in office, I realized that I could work on the exact same problems in office that I was working on in the community and be able to help in a more global way, mm-hmm. and help in a more structural way. That's what led to me wanting to go. And I think, you know, because I was older, my tolerance level was a lot higher. I don't think I could have tolerated the environment I work in when I was younger. That's why I was, and I told AOC this, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I told her, I said, you know, the difference between me and you, when I was 29, the last thing in the world I would have thought of being was a politician. I said, because I wouldn't have been able to tolerate it. And so I said, so it'll be interesting to see how you know, how you fare. I think she's done well so far, but it'll be interesting if we lose the House to see how AOC, as well as some of the other younger ones, function in the minority.
It's very different being in the minority than in charge. In
that right. Way. Well, especially when the minority is crazy.
Well, exactly. And especially when the idea of compromise, well, this is, you, one can find examples of this in both directions, but the idea of making, you know, reaching across the aisle, as that cliche goes, is seen as a bad characteristic.
But we have to be clear, because right now you have one of the parties, the Republican Party, that has been seized by an extremist element.
Yes. Now, without a doubt,
the Democratic Party might have its own view. But the anti-democratic small d forces that have taken over the Republican Party do not want to govern. No. Their mission is to tear government.
Is to obstruct.
Down. So that is a very, very, very different situation. And you talk to some of the old timers who are in Congress, who are Republicans, who will tell you that they don't recognize this party anymore, but they know they have to shut up and cooperate or they will be punished. That's one thing that is different about the two parties. The Democratic Party maybe should punish sometimes, but does not.
I know it's I don't know how you've done it, Karen Bass. I don't know how
you know how, David, it's not difficult. I keep my eyes on the prize. I know why I am there. I know what it is I am trying to do. And everything else is noise. If you don't, and I tell this to people all the time who tell me, oh, I want to run for office. I want to run for office. Why? What is your goal? What is it that you want to accomplish? Because if you are not clear, you will be sucked up into the mess. But if you go in and you have a clear agenda and you can stay laser focused on that, then you can deal with it and you can get things done.
Well, yeah, you know, that's easy for you to say. And it's because you're you, and not everybody is you. Not everybody is you, which is why if I were in Los Angeles, I would be voting for you. I think I've said this to you before. I think I've told you this before, and I know we have to go because your time is very limited. But I remember the first time I got to vote for you, because it was the first time I got to vote for a candidate that I actually cared about winning. It felt so good. So yeah. You have my spiritual vote.
I appreciate that.
And when I am in Los Angeles and you are mayor, I'll you know, we'll grab that beer and conversation, and I will look forward to it. At the same restaurant, which we are not talking about because we don't want everybody else to be there. So, hey, I love you, Karen. Thank you so much for having this conversation with me. Thank you so much. I wish you, I don't just wish you, I just like my whole being is in your direction. And
thank you.
And don't let the bastards get to your head, as they say.
They won't, and love you back.
Okay. You take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryant here on LA Talk Radio.